Last year, at the end of April, beginning of May, down in southern Brazil, where we are located, we received 44% of our annual rain in 1 week. We have four main rivers that flow through Brazil, and they form the world's largest freshwater lagoon, which is right beside our city. And it completely overwhelmed our city. And there was catastrophic flooding that we could never have imagined. The worst flooding in the history of our area. 680,000 people were directly impacted by these floods, which means they lost all of their possessions, and many of them's homes were condemned because they sat underwater for so long. There's no house insurance in Brazil, and so for many of these people, they will never completely recover. Paulo and I were indirectly affected, so we live in an apartment on the seventh floor, so the water didn't reach our apartment, but we did lose power and water as our city of 1.5 million, the whole entire electrical grid, or most of the electrical grid, had to be turned off because it flooded, and all of our water pumps were completely invaded by water and flooded. And as we saw many of our friends and people from our own congregation, where my husband serves as pastor, we also support two church plants, and they were also completely flooded, as well as all the people in those in the church plants. It reminded me of one of the stories that I've heard since I was a small child, and I invite you to open your Bibles with me to read this text. It's found in Mark chapter 4, verses 35 to 41. Mark chapter 4, verses 35 to 41. That day when evening came, he said to his disciples, "Let us go over to the other side." Leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. There were also other boats with him. A furious squall came up, and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said to him, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" He got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, "Quiet, be still." Then the wind died down and it was completely calm. He said to his disciples, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" They were terrified and asked each other, "Who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him." And as I looked at this passage with this whole new perspective, there were a couple of things that really stood out to me. And the first is that Jesus sends us to pass through the storm. As we read chapter 4, we find that Jesus he's in front of this large crowd, and he's teaching parables to them, and he's actually standing in the boat, in the water, so that the people can hear him and see him. And after this long, long day of being with this group, he invited the disciples to join him in the boat and asked them to go to the other side, and they were actually asking questions of him about what he had shared during that day, getting more details. And there was twice that he said during that day, "He who has ears to hear, let him hear." He who has ears to hear, let him hear. And I think the disciples actually had ears to hear. They'd just been freshly called to be his followers, and they were paying a lot of attention to what Jesus was saying. The other thing I believe with my new perspective was that Jesus knew the storm was coming. The Sea of Galilee was famous for its storms, just the way it was set in kind of in a valley surrounded by mountains, and these winds would come in and they'd have no way to escape, and it would cause these storms. And so I believe that Jesus knew. He knew that they were going to be going into this storm. Much like when he, in another story, sent his disciples to cross the same sea, and he said, I'll meet you on the other side. And we saw him walking through the storm. And when the storm came up, the disciples did the right thing. They called on Jesus for help. And as we saw, begin to see the effects of this flooding, you'll see here, this is in between those four rivers that I was telling you about. We have islands, and this is where the poorest of the poor live. The most marginalized people live on these islands. And as you can see, the islands were completely covered in water. One of my very closest friends, she's like a sister to me, lives in a city on the other side of the islands, a city of 40,000, and it was completely covered in water. The water, one of the biggest challenge was the water, the level of the water was very high in some of the parts. So there were, in many cases, homes that were completely covered in water. You couldn't even see the rooftops anymore. But then there were also homes that were a little bit higher. But they, in a lot of the neighborhoods, the water actually went over the dikes that had been built. So there was no way for the water to escape after. And the community where we have one of our church plants, it had water up to most of the rooftops or higher for a period of 5 weeks until the government brought pumps in to finally pump the water out. And so that's why a lot of the homes, especially in that neighborhood, were condemned, because the ground underneath kind of almost turned into swampland. And so here's a picture that something we encountered in that very neighborhood. So as the water would come down, here's a fridge sitting on top of someone's house. This is how people would come back and find their homes. And just devastating, like the roof's completely destroyed. And then there was a lot of looting and stealing going on. So you see a window that's been broken out so people can try and find anything that's worth saving. And in this case, not too far from that first house, was another house where the actual roof detached from the house and was just floating on top. And so when the water finally came down, the roof landed in the front yard. And so our biggest momentum at the very beginning, our city was actually cut off from this city, which is right next to us, which is where our church is and where we do lots of ministry, and it was the hardest hit area. We were cut off because we were surrounded by floodwaters. And there was one small road that could get in and out, but it was almost impossible to get in and out because of all the traffic and things like that. And so our biggest ministry at the very beginning as the North American Baptist field in Brazil was sending money out to churches, to pastors who were doing all of the rescuing, churches who were opening their doors to shelter. I mean, these churches, they just literally opened their doors and said, if you can make it here, come. And we'll keep you safe. And so we were sending funds out to buy mattresses and sending funds to buy food or trying to get food to these places and drinkable water. The irony in all the flooding, all the water, is there was no drinking water. And I was actually having people, friends of mine, bringing it in from other cities up to 2 hours away. We were renting trailers and renting trucks that are like U-Hauls and bringing as much water and food that we could, because the actual trucks that go to the grocery stores in our area weren't getting through. And there were pastors who were also going out and rescuing people still, you know, in water up to their chest, literally carrying people out of their homes. And that just became, that was the most urgent. I just sent out almost 32,000 Brazilian reais in 2 weeks. That was before NAB even started the disaster relief fund, but it was very apparent to us that these churches, they're very small churches. They don't have any money left over at the end of the month. Most of them can't even afford to pay a pastor. What we had funds. We had funds in our bank account. That was the way that God had called us to serve when we couldn't actually get to these places at first. And it was just, and if we had no power, so every day we'd go to this mall that had a generator, and it was us and a lot of other people, and we'd plug in our power bar, and we'd, you know, juice up all of our cell phones again and computers, the way that we were trying to communicate with the world, and then go back home to our apartments and keep monitoring our cell phones principally and just seeing what was happening and how we could help and making connections with people as best we could to help get people the food and the water and even the rescuing that they needed. The other thing that really stands out to me in this passage is that in the midst of this huge storm that the disciples had, and in the midst of the storm that we were going through in Brazil, it is just once again an important reminder that Jesus is our peace in the midst of the storm. It says that he got up and he rebuked the wind and said to the wave, "Quiet, be still." Then the wind died down and it was completely calm. You know, here the disciples, they find Jesus sleeping in this raging storm, but they knew, they might not have known a lot about him at that point, but they knew that he was the source of the peace that they so desperately needed. He wasn't just someone who had peace. Jesus was the peace, and he brought that peace to the wind and the waves. And we began to see examples of that in Brazil. I had two big prayer requests during this time. And the first one was that God would lead us to the people that really needed help. And NAB had started the Disaster Relief Fund, and we're so very grateful for all who contributed to that. We raised over $50,000 US, and we were able to help many, many people. And the Lord faithfully answered that prayer. And my second big prayer request in this, and this was the most important to me, was that people would declare in the midst of this that our God is a good God. I believe that with every fiber of my being, even though I was seeing all this tragedy around me, our God is a good God. And the Lord was faithful and he answered that prayer request. Another really good friend of ours, Paulo's and mine, he and his wife, they're very close to us. He's a pastor, and he was involved in rescue efforts, and he his own home was flooded, but he saved a group of 30 people, and he took them to his church at first, and then they had to be evacuated from there. He took them somewhere else, and they had to get evacuated again. He just took 30 people around until he could find a safe place for them. And he worked tirelessly. And he is like that. He just loves Jesus so much. He loves serving Jesus. He's like, day off? Why would I take a day off when I'm having so much fun doing what I love to do? And he works with the tribal people in Brazil. He works with drug addicts. He goes into the most dangerous parts of Brazil where there's drug traffickers who are in charge, and he befriends them and he shares the gospel with them. And then he cares not only for his own church, but his denomination at times will send him to care for other churches because he's so good at it. And he said to me, we gave him all of the people that we were able to help. We would give them a certain amount of funds, and we said, you have this much to spend on helping buy stuff for your house. And if you still need more, let us know and we'll see what we can do. And so he got this amount of funds, and he came up to me and he said, you know what? I had enough money left over to buy an air conditioner. And we might think that's frivolous, but where I live, in the summers, it's in the 40s, 98% humidity. And he said, you don't know what difference this is going to make for me to get a good night's rest so I can continue to serve the Lord. And he said, God is so good. He even gave me an air conditioner. I got so much more now than what I lost. God is a good God. And as we think more of this story, I love art. I'm not an expert by any means, but I think art just, it really speaks volumes. And there's this famous painting by Rembrandt called The Storm on the Sea of Galilee. And I find it so fascinating that Rembrandt painted his own face in the face of one of the disciples, one of the terrified disciples, as a tribute to Jesus being peace in this storm. And actually, this painting was stolen in 1990 and has never been recovered. It's a really fun mystery, actually. Another wonderful painting that I love and speaks so much to me is by Ron Diciani. He's known as the preacher without words. He paints fabulous paintings from the Gospels, from the Bible. And here we have one called The Storm, and it's fascinating to me. Here's Jesus walking through the storm. He didn't even calm it. He'd said, meet me on the other side. The storm came up, and he just started walking through the storm. You know, he didn't worry that it was raging all around him. He was at peace. I've actually seen the real painting, and the face is just a face of peace. And actually, I think it's really funny that, you know, in one of the versions we have in our Bible, it says he was crossing the sea. And he wasn't even, I don't think he was even going to go hang out on the boat with the disciples, because he said, meet me on the other side. They were the ones who saw him, thought he was a ghost, recognized who he was, and called him over to help them, because he is the source of our peace. Peace is a beautiful word that has such a deep meaning in our Bible. In Hebrew, it's the famous shalom, a state of well-being, of tranquility, prosperity, and security. Shalom is the blessing. It's the manifestation of God's divine grace. And then in the New Testament, we find that it is in Jesus. Jesus is our shalom. He is our Prince of Peace. He not only brings peace to us, but he is peace. He's this manifestation of God's divine grace in our life. And it is in the fullness that we have when we are reconciled with God through Jesus Christ that we can receive this peace. And we have his Holy Spirit living in us. We have this peace inside of us. And therefore, having this peace inside of us, we can bring hope. And so I shared that one of our church plants was in the worst hit neighborhood, and our church planter, actually, he was so busy working and helping others that my husband Paulo, who is a peaceful guy, as Pastor Norm shared, you know, he went and he cleaned out the majority of Ricardo's house. He basically took all of his possessions and put them in the front where the trucks from the city were coming and just taking it all away. And I think for Ricardo, it was also so traumatic. He just couldn't bring himself to clean his own house, even though he was helping others do that. And so Paulo stepped in and he brought peace to this situation. Another way that we were able to bring peace to these people was a school that was just down the street from the church plant. All of the families, all of the kids, they lost everything. And we had some churches in the States who got a hold of us, and they said for their vacation Bible schools last year, they wanted to raise funds to help. And so we started a school project. And so with the funds raised at Vacation Bible School and also the funds that we had from our disaster relief, we bought school supplies for an entire school, backpacks and school supplies for 450 kids. And we were able to come, and they were able to choose the backpacks that they wanted, and we were able to share the gospel with them. We were able to pray. And even now, Ricardo, our church planter, and his daughter, who you see in the photo, Mariana, they go every week to this school, and they're serving this school and ministering in the lives of this school. And it's been an open door for this church plant. And then our neighborhood where our church was evacuated, but once the evacuation lifted, our church became a distribution center for our whole entire community, as well as the different communities close to us that were impacted. And Samaritan's Purse, who I think many know here, they were on the ground with us within 3 days. They were given permission to land at our Air Force base, and they brought 5 jumbo jets full of supplies. And they brought 10 water filtration systems, and our church was given one of these systems, and they're very expensive, but they gave it to us, and we were able to provide drinkable water for not only our community, but all of the surrounding communities for months. And we've now been able to move this filtration system to where the church plant is. And at first, our church people, we have like 30 people in our church, and they were like, what about the water bill? Like, this is going to be expensive. And so I said, no worry, our mission with our disaster relief fund will take care of it. But in the end, the city forgave it. Yay! Yeah, it was great. And so now it's moved. And what's really, it's just God's provision, is that where the church plant is a warehouse that is owned by the church planter. And he has a well, free water. It lasts 10 years, the water filtration system. But it was a way for us to be peace in the storm that this community had. And the next thing that I never noticed in all my years reading this passage, and even as I'm a seminary professor, I'd never really paid attention to verse 36, which says, leaving the crowds behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. There were also other boats with him. Am I the only one who didn't notice it? It wasn't just the boat with the disciples in it, but there were other boats that left and proceeded to cross the Sea of Galilee with Jesus. And it showed me that, you know, others around us can experience this peace that Jesus brings in our lives. It not only is us, you know, doing it, but they're impacted when we radiate the peace of Jesus Christ. And there's one of the very famous passages that talks about shalom in the Old Testament, and even Pastor Norm made a reference to this, is when the people were taken away into exile by King Nebuchadnezzar, and they were in Babylon, and they were complaining, and they were very bitter, and they were very upset. And God, he said to them, also seek the shalom and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you too will prosper. And right before this verse, God had said to these people, he had said, build houses, plant gardens, establish yourself among these Babylonians, give your kids in marriage. And then he said, and pray that my shalom, my peace, will rest over this city full of your enemies who have made you slaves, this city who have hated you. Pray that my peace reigns over them. We not only have Jesus' peace in us, but we are called as Jesus' followers to be peacemakers. We are called to share his peace with those around us. Where we are, people should experience the peace of Jesus in every and any moment. And so, not only have we done a lot of work in helping people during the floods, but I serve as a professor at a seminary. In this last year, I've actually transitioned to a new seminary because the seminary where I was, they closed their pastoral formation program, which was their only program. So I'm now in this new seminary, and it's the same kind of program, the same kind of teaching, and it's my job not only to teach them, but to bring the peace of Jesus to them. And it's just so exciting to be with this group of young people, many of them called to international missions, which is so exciting for me. Who doesn't love, I love missions, right? Who doesn't love missions if not the missionaries? Also, I continue to serve with Kairos University, which we brought to Brazil, and we have it in Portuguese. And so here you can see my student Renata. She's in the lower right-hand corner in the green. She is a pastor's wife. She is a dentist. She is the mother of a small daughter, Cecilia, who's 4. And she loves Jesus with all her heart. And she's doing her master's to better prepare herself for the ministry that her and her husband have. And so I work with her team of mentors. And so not only are we trying to walk with her on this great journey, but be peace in the midst of the challenges that she faces trying to balance all of this stuff. And our field, we just started a partnership with our Southern Baptist colleagues, and we have started a church planting network to support the church planters in our area. I am in the very southernmost state of Brazil, Paulo and I, and we actually, it's a state that's not very reached for the gospel. The population of Baptists is 0.1%, just to give you an idea. And if you put all the evangelicals together, the true evangelicals, it would be probably about 4%. So we want to come alongside our church planters. They're lovely couples who feel really called to plant churches in their neighborhoods. Often they're working very isolated from others in a community where they're by themselves, and they usually are not able to have a salary for being church planters, so they often have to work in other jobs. A lot of them are Uber drivers just because they can kind of set their own schedule, so it works out well for them, but they also have other professions and things like that. And we're not experts in church planting, but our Southern Baptist colleague is the one in the photo with the microphone. But, you know, our mission, we're more focused on theological education, but we're just like, someone's got to come along and support these people because they have it's really hard for them. Sonia talked about spiritual warfare. I mean, they're the guys that are at the front of the battle line with the spiritual warfare and just the challenges they face. And so we started this network without any big plans, but we just want to hear what their needs are, and we're going to do our best to meet those needs. And they're very practical, sometimes like Bibles. Recently, we were able to provide 3,000 Bibles to this group. And they're also we also want to help with training, and we want to help just with prayer support and just coming alongside them so they don't feel alone, so that they too can feel this peace and this hope that we have in Jesus Christ. And our fund, our disaster relief fund, has come to an end, but we've helped many different church planters, many, many people who were always associated with our ministry and theological education. Any students or staff that were affected were directly helped by the disaster relief. And we even had enough money to come alongside and work together with our Brazilian Baptist Convention. They were focused on helping pastors and churches, and so we were able to help some of that too, and even the individuals in the church plants and things like that. So praise the Lord, we were able to help many people. And I just want to encourage you, you know, in the storms of life, look to the source of our peace, Jesus. But as you come alongside other people, be the peace of Christ in their lives too. I think Sonia did a beautiful message in sharing how we have this responsibility to bring peace into the lives of everyone we meet. It could be as simple as the person who's at the cash register at the grocery store. You know, be the person that when she gets home after her shift says, "I had a really hard day, but there was this one person who asked how I was doing, who brought me a sense of peace in the storm that I face today." How can you be peace in the midst of others who are being so challenged, others who are hurting, who are grieving because of loss? Be the peace of Christ in their lives. And be someone who brings the gospel of peace, not only with your actions, but with your words. Share who Jesus is in their lives. This is not only what Jesus calls us to do, but it is our great privilege to do this. And just as I think to close it, I just want to close with a passage that became very, very important to us. God is our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth give way and the mountains fall in the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam and the mountains quake with the surging. And at the very end of this beautiful psalm, Psalm 46, we read the words that are a shadow of what Jesus did in that storm. We read, "Be still. Be quiet. Calm down. Stop. Stop worrying. Be still and know that I am God. I am peace, the source of all peace and hope." As Jesus calmed this storm, in the midst of our storms and the storms of the people raging around us, may we be still and know that I am God. The very end, as Jesus had calmed the storm, the disciples looked at him and he said, "I spent all day telling you about who I am and what my kingdom means. He who has ears to hear, let him hear." But Jesus, in this moment of calming the storm, said he who has eyes to see, let him see. May we see that in the midst of all the storms, Jesus is our peace. Amen.